Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Amazing way. He's business's bad boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep, he's one bad apple.
That's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Girl, I'm bad, 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 bad.
Amazing why.
Yes, sir.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you. If you just tuned in, thank you for doing that. We're glad you're here. Nicole Galinas is here, ladies and gentlemen. I know that's why you stay tuned in, if you're still listening, is because of Nicole, not because of me. Because Nicole's such a cool lady. She is the she's a Searle Foundation Trust Fellow at Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor to City Journal. And she's one of our outstanding Brain Trust members. Nicole Galinas, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. It's good to be on. Thanks for the kind words.
It's great to have you back. No, we know who. I mean, you know, you have your groupies here, Nicole, who they are. They only show up when you show up.
It's okay.
It's all because of you, Nicole. Nicole, about last October, I started saying that I feared we were sailing into a perfect storm. You've seen that movie. You saw, I'm sure you've seen the scenario where, you know, you got three monster storms converging at one, you know, as we used to say in the Army, in one 8-digit grid coordinate, and then our ship is right there on top of that, on that little coordinate. And it seems to me that that's what I saw back in October between the meltdown of the financial industry, the impact it was having on the economy, the fear it was creating for the marketplace and for the population. And then we had this election. And the people who have been you know, wanting to have more control over the economy than ever, that, you know, for so long now, were brought into power. And so now we've got this perfect storm and we're trying to sort it all out. And one of the things that's one of the byproducts of all this is that we predicted, you and I both predicted this months ago, was a significant increase in regulations. And you've been tracking all this, haven't you?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, talk to us about one of the big things that we knew, Nicole, was that there was definitely going to be more financial regulations.
Sure, and I don't think it would be any different no matter who won the election. You know, and this fits into the whole issue of financial regulation. We have inadequately regulated the financial sector.
Well, now, can I ask you a question? And see, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a question I've been wanting to ask somebody, and you're the perfect person to ask this.
Sure.
Do we have inadequate regulation, or do we have inadequate enforcement of regulation?
Well, we have both. For 25 years, and this is why we are where we are today, we didn't regulate the system adequately, and we didn't enforce the regulations that we had on the books, and how it turned out is that failing to properly regulate the financial markets didn't get us freer markets. It got us effectively socialization of the financial markets. And let's remember who this happened under. It happened under President
Absolutely.
Bush. And I'm not saying that to say that he is a bad man compared to President Obama.
No.
It's a question of, I think there's a lot, this is the natural end to improperly regulating the financial sector. And how did we fail to regulate? Well, from the 1930s until the early 80s, we had an orderly way for banks to fail and for their lenders to take their losses without disrupting the rest of the economy. The
right.
FDIC, as everybody knows, would take over these firms, make the uninsured depositors and other lenders, as well as the shareholders, take their lumps and sell the bank off to a more competent manager. And that stopped working in the early 80s when we started to have our first too-big-to-fail banks. That's a phrase that's gotten infamous over the past few years. It first cropped up in the language in 1984 when we had, you know, many of your listeners will remember, Continental Illinois started to go under. The government saved it. Paul Volcker said at the time, you know, Volcker was, of course, the Fed chairman, and he said, this is not a precedent. This is a unique circumstance.
Right.
And, of course, that was not correct.
It became a precedent, didn't it?
Right. And many people at the time recognized that it was a precedent, and they warned, you know, at the time, the Independent Bankers Association, made up of small bankers, said, this is...
Hold on to that thought, Nicole. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, one of the things that that I want to talk about is I want to come back to my question about do we have too much we have not enough regulation or not enough enforcement of regulation. I've got another question on that for Nicole Galinas. We'll do that right after these messages. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Little Steely Dan bringing us back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate and one of my favorite bands in the whole world. Outstanding. Still rocking after all these years. And my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Check out my blog and my knowledge base, AskJim.biz. The Brain Trust members are there. Lots and lots of stuff. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. Nicole Galinas is our guest. She's with the Manhattan Institute and also a contributing editor at the City Journal. Nicole, as we went to the break, or just before we went to the break, I asked this question. Do we have too little regulation or too little enforcement of existing regulations? And you said a little of both. But here's my model for what for my question. When we had all the corporate malfeasance going on back in, you know, the early part of this decade, with Tyco and WorldCom and Enron and et cetera, et cetera, there were about a dozen of those companies that just went over the edge. Those companies, every single one of those perpetrators, were convicted and sentenced under laws that were already on the books that just had not been properly previously regulated and enforced. But yet, our government still passed Sarbanes-Oxley, which was basically closing the barn door after the horse was out. It didn't accomplish, in my opinion, an awful lot. And that's what I fear we're going to get from our government right now, Republicans and Democrats.
Sure, that's why I say we had inadequate regulation. We didn't have too little or too much. We had, you know, probably we had too much, but it was not the right regulations. We needed a way, you know, we should have learned after Continental failed in 1984. We should have learned again in 1998 when a hedge fund called Long-Term Capital
right.
Management failed, that we needed a way for these firms to be able to go under in an orderly fashion, not a disorderly fashion like Lehman Brothers. And the government just ignored this warning sign, and it had the effect of removing financial discipline from these firms, because if you are a lender to one of these banks, you would say, well, I don't really care what the bank does with my money, because
right.
I know in a crisis the government will come out and help me, which is what they've done. And if we don't put in place the right regulations to reassert that these firms are going to have an orderly way to fail, that's going to happen again. So what's wrong with these regulations that Obama has proposed? Well, they don't do that, first of all. There's no directive to the Treasury that lenders to these firms have to take their losses, that the goal in taking over a company like AIG or Citibank, or not officially taking it over, but giving it so much money that we're the major stakeholder, should be to wind those assets back into the private sector.
So you're saying, Nicole, that the regulations that are being proposed are not going to really fix the problem?
No, that one is not. A couple
see,
things.
See, this brings me back, folks, and Nicole, you may have heard me say this before, and I've said this to my audience before. The reason we have what, this recession that we're in, this debacle that we're in right now, was not a normal business cycle. This was manufactured by greed on Wall Street and in, at the banks, back in the top banking industry. It was, and by incompetence in Wall Street, and in my opinion, corruption between the two. And what you're describing right now, Nicole, is the incompetence level.
Well, I don't think it's greed. I don't think people are any more or less
greedy. I'm talking about the governments not regulating, not learning their lesson. I'm calling that the incompetence element of this.
Well, you can call it incompetence. It's also, they have every motive not to. They have every motive to, and this also goes for politicians of both parties. You know, people love to talk about Barney Frank and the other, you know, wonderful villains, but every politician in the country has a motive to let these guys stay too big to fail, to let them start reaping in the profits again with their cheap money that's now provided by the government, because it just solves so many short-term problems. With a booming Wall Street, California and New York don't need federal bailouts.
Right.
The American consumer can keep spending money. One of the things that these bailouts have done is these, and I'm talking about before last year, banks that had all of this cheap money from their own lenders could go and in turn and lend it to the American consumer, and people were far too indebted, and that has to stop, and everybody has every motive not to let it stop. The Chinese government has a motive not to let it stop because they want to keep selling us cheap.
So basically, it's what it sounds like, Nicole, is the little guy doesn't have a chance.
Well, it's, you know, I've talked to so many small bankers, and it's you're right. That's a fair way of putting it. It's very difficult, and I think another place where we have,
so we're just pawns on this chessboard. We may not even be pawns. We might just be dust on the pawns on the chessboard.
Well, that's very philosophical, but yes, I think
that's me. I get that a lot, Nicole. Yeah. Mr. Philosopher. Go ahead.
And another place where they're doing something right is making sure that these unregulated derivatives trade on an exchange or clearinghouse. I mean, this was another kind of willful negligence on the part of successive administrations, that when you had this hedge fund blow up 11 years ago, it couldn't be allowed to fail because it had all of these bets, $1 trillion worth of bets throughout the world, and these unregulated derivatives where it didn't have to conform to any Depression-era regulations. It didn't have to put any cash down on margin requirements. Mm-hmm.
We didn't learn anything from that, did we? And that's you make an excellent point. And, folks, this was one of the first crises that I covered on my show. I had only started about 8 or 9 months before, Nicole, in the latter part of 97. And I remember I was tracking the Fed in those days, and the Fed had two intermeeting rate cuts abruptly, just to deal with long-term capital management. I mean, it could have gotten really ugly, but what Nicole is telling us is we didn't learn anything from that. The steps weren't taken to prevent it from happening again, and ultimately, as we know, last fall it happened again, but only on a much larger scale. We're going to come back, and I'm going to see if Nicole can sort all this out for us and tell us where we should be going. Stay with us. Seven till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Nicole Galinas. She's with Manhattan Institute and the City Journal. And Nicole, tell us how we can find you and your organizations online.
Sure. We are online at city-journal.org and manhattan-institute.org.
So check those out, and you can find all the things that Nicole writes about these things, which is many, many things. And you got a new book coming out in the fall, don't you?
Yeah, it looks like late November, early December. I wrote a book that will be called Saving Capitalism from Wall Street and Washington After the Fall.
So you could almost have said Saving Capitalism from Itself, Nicole.
Yeah.
I feel like we've that capitalism has let itself down to some degree, but I want you to know that we expect to launch your book on this show.
Excellent. I'd love to come on and talk about the book, but we're kind of, you know, we're talking about it today because it has all that good financial regulation stuff in it.
You're getting a preview, folks. So, Nicole, sort all this out for us. What's going to happen? What should happen?
Well, what should happen is we need a way for these bad companies to fail. You need to tweak the bankruptcy code.
That's the essence. Isn't that one of the founding foundation blocks of capitalism is when something doesn't work, it's supposed to fail. And the marketplace absorbs it.
Absolutely. And I think it's important, you know, capitalism has had a bad rap over the past 6 months, or now it's been really a year. And capitalism wasn't really allowed to work. I mean, the markets tried very valiantly for 25 years to say this system is not working, there's something very wrong here, and the government kind of thwarted it at every angle.
That's the incompetence.
Right. Well, it's motive as well, and this is where we ended up. And I think other, you know, the simplest regulations work best. You have to have laws, or not laws, but rules against excessive borrowing. You know, for 80 years, so nearly 80 years, we haven't been able to borrow to buy the full price of a stock. You have to put 50% down, and that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
It doesn't stop the free market economy. It saved us from what we're going through now when the tech bubble burst. We didn't have all of this unpaid debt standing in the economy. You have to do the same thing for houses. You have to have a down payment. You have to do the same thing for unregulated financial derivatives. And I think if you do these two things, it's 80% of the battle. And by the way, that keeps you from having to micromanage. If you just tell these banks you're going to go out of business if something goes wrong and you can't borrow too much, they're not going to be paying their workers as much as they have, because they won't have as much free money.
Right. Well, and you said the motive. When you use motive, that's tantamount to corruption.
Well, it's, even to be nicer and say, for the sake of argument, it's not men smoking cigars in a room and devising corruption schemes. It's just everybody was thinking the same thing. I mean, Chuck Schumer is somebody who started off in the 80s saying we need to regulate this industry. It's shown that it's been very risky. And 20 years later, he was saying, no, we have to get rid of regulations.
Right.
And I don't think it's corruption. I think it's just that everyone thought that everything was wonderful. And by the way, it was making the politicians' job much easier, because everyone could just borrow and borrow and borrow and spend and spend. So everyone just had a good reason to keep this going.
Yeah. When it all comes back, and this is a sad commentary for me, but I've asked other people this, and I get an answer similar to the ones you gave me earlier, and that is that the little guys like me investing on Wall Street are trying out here in America, small business America, trying to do our job.
Right.
It's almost like we don't have a chance. I mean, it's like the deck is stacked against us.
It's very difficult, and things like the new consumer financial product regulator, whatever that's called, it's not going to help little people unless they go after what the big banks don't want, which is things like your 401k shouldn't force you to pick from 5 mutual funds. You should have full competition.
Right.
And they don't want that, because the big banks don't want that.
Well, and folks, here's what you have to do. Here's how we fix this, you and I. We fix this by voting for the people, by telling the people who are currently elected, who we've got up there, what we think they ought to be doing, we think they ought to be doing their job, and or associating with organizations that you agree with and have them lobby for you, which is a big deal and very important, and then voting for the people that you think are going to run the government in a way that protects capitalism and doesn't become codependent, like we've got a lot of these folks up there. Nicole, last thoughts, 10 seconds.
Well, absolutely. The small business advocate and the small business person has to be out there having his and her voice heard as well, because these guys in Washington, they just live in a bubble between big finance and big government.
That's exactly right. That's the corruption part. Hey, thanks, Nicole, for being here. Good job today.
Thanks so much, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Nicole Galinas, ladies and gentlemen, I got to go for this hour. I'll be back after the news. Whatever you do, don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.